right, time once again for the movie retrospective show. Now, as I mentioned on the last episode of the podcast, our friend Dominic sent us the Steelbook edition of John Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13, which was on the list to review anyway, but we decided we would get around to it. So thank you very much, Dominic. That was really, really cool.
Yeah, Dominic actually followed instructions. He sent me a damn Blu-ray. And not only that, but the deluxe Steelbook, which that was fucking awesome, man. Thanks.
Yeah.
I actually didn't like this movie the first time I saw it, but watching it again, it's pretty fucking cool.
It's one that definitely needs like a second viewing because...
Yeah, it's better on the second viewing.
I mean, I think, okay, so this was John Carpenter's, I guess you could call it his first real movie, because he did make Dark Star before this, but that was, I mean, let's be honest, that was like a student film.
Yeah.
So this was like his first one. Now, the interesting thing about this is that basically this producer comes to him and is like, you can make a movie and you can make whatever you want, as long as it's under $100,000.
Yeah.
Right? So John Carpenter had been writing spec scripts, and one of them was this movie, although it wasn't called Assault on Precinct 13. It was actually called The Anderson Alamo.
Yeah.
He wanted to make a Western, but obviously you're not going to be able to make a Western for $100,000 because you need all like the period costumes and sets and everything
like
that.
Taking care of horses.
Right, and that kind of stuff. So he said, well, I'll do a Western, but I'll set it in present-day Los Angeles.
Yeah. What he did here, actually, you can really see that this is a prototype of a lot of Carpenter movies to come.
Oh, yeah.
The first time I watched it, it seemed to be kind of like a jumbled kind of mess and kind of random at first. And I think I might have been fighting the movie. I was trying to make the movie into something that it wasn't instead of just letting the movie roll. Basically, what you got here is you have like a weird mixture of a Western, Escape from New York, and The Warriors.
Yeah.
Kinda. Remember that old fucking cheesy-ass gangster movie, The Warriors?
Come out and play, yay!
Yeah, yeah. And that's quickly going to like, you know, South Side Story or West Side Story, yeah.
And it's like, South Side Story, East Side Story.
Trying to be hard as fuck and look dressed like that. Didn't work.
Can I say just how much I love, like, the gang in the street gang in this is called Street Thunder.
Yeah, it's like,
and I must say that I love all the names of, like, gangs from the movies in the 70s and 80s. But it's like, so the gang's called Street Thunder. I'm like, what, was Twinkle Bunnies taken? Yeah. Or I was like, what the fuck
you kind see of name? In the movie, you see a lot of, like, character archetypes that Carpenter uses later in movies. Like, Wilson is definitely Snake Plissken.
Oh, yeah, big time.
You know,
Napoleon Wilson, who's one of the convicts in this.
Yeah, and he's kind of like, you know, he's more like a Johnny Cash type guy. He doesn't look as cool as Snake, but, you know, had the Krussel been around in this era, which he wasn't. He was a little kid probably working for Disney at this time.
Yeah, I think he was still in Disney
but,
movies
you know,
in the
70s. Krussel was around, Krussel would have been cast. And then there's a black convict in there who's pretty fucking cool, and you can tell that this is basically Keith David. Later on, it'd been Keith David in The Thing.
Yeah.
There's a hottie in there who's kind of like a tough secretary for the cops, you know what I mean, a police secretary, and that would have been Adrienne Barbeau.
Yeah.
There's some boob action there, too, but it's weird because Adrienne was like in your face. This girl's kind of like lift and separate.
What was the first?
They were making fun of that bra the whole fucking time.
It wasn't her. It's the bra.
It's the bra.
Well, it's like, that's what's so funny. It's like the first time that she comes on, her character name is Lee. She's actually played by Laurie Zimmer. I'll get into
that
cute. In a little minute.
She's real cute.
Yeah, but it's like, it's just so funny to me how, I guess this was a thing in the early 70s, because I do remember like Playtex commercials and stuff. Like, I guess it was Playtex that were like lift and separate. I'm like why on earth would you want to do that? Well, it's like, I guess it's better.
This way, then we'll point it that way.
Well, it's better than having like a boob shelf, essentially, which
I think I'd rather have a boob shelf.
Which is kind of what I have, like, whether I like it or not.
I'd rather have that boob shelf.
But you
could get in there.
But for women that were just like, you know, B cups or C cups or whatever, it's like for some reason, all the bras at that time were like, yeah, you have to like lift them up, which that's good. But then you want them like far apart. I'm like, no, I don't think we want them far apart. That's very strange looking.
Yeah, and then...
We both said lift and separate at the same time.
Yeah,
when
as soon as we saw it, we go, lift and separate. And then, like, the main character is kind of a policeman who's like a black lieutenant, and he's really getting kind of the shitty end of the stick. They're making him guard this.
He's new, right? Isn't he new on the job?
He's kind of new on the job.
Like a rookie.
But he's a lieutenant, so he came out of academy.
Yeah, okay.
He's not really getting much respect, and they make him guard this police precinct that the cops are moving out of. So he's pulling the very last shift in this police station. And having nothing to do with this, a gang killed an ice cream man and a little girl. And the father of the little girl goes on a rampage and kills a couple of these gang members. And he runs into that police station. The gang sees him. So later on that night, they make this big assault on this damn police station. It's like something out of a Western movie. And they have to let the convicts out to help defend the damn police station. And they don't have enough ammo. And a lot of cool shit happens in it. For some reason, I really wanted the movie to be Escape from New York when I was first watching it, which got in the way of the tone of the movie. You just got to accept the movie for what it is. The edit is a little strange by today's standards. It's a movie of the time. The dialogue is very much dialogue of the time. But it still has that awesome soundtrack. The score to this is
fucking great.
Yeah,
all Carpenter scores are great.
Carpenter's got this for... And this is the late 70s.
But 76 this
76,
came out.
So mid-70s. And you could tell the score is like way ahead of its time. It was like something Bowie would have written. Like off the Low album.
The crazy
album
thing about seeing this is that you can see... I mean, I haven't seen Dark Star for a really long time. But you can see that this is, you know, his first like real movie. It only costs like $100,000 to make. But you can see it's almost like John Carpenter's vision came out like fully formed. You know what I mean? Like the shots in this movie, like the music,
it's Carpenter arrives as Carpenter.
He really does. Yeah. It's not like there's kind of this nascent. I mean, the thing is, yes, it's a movie from 1976. Yes, you can tell it's from 1976.
Yeah.
And there's that kind of tropes. And it was made for cheap, although it doesn't look cheap. It actually looks really good because he said that they spent like a large portion of the budget on like the best, like Panavision cameras, like the best processing and stuff like that. Because they wanted it to look like a real movie.
Now, I was living in California at the time. I would have been probably about 7. And it reminds me of growing up in Carson, California in that era, just as shitty as fucking Carson and California looked.
I know, everything looks like crap. Everything looked like crap in the 70s. Florida kind of looked like that too, a little bit.
Yeah, and everything looked old before its time. Weird Spanish fucking cheap looking buildings, fucking dead grass everywhere, fucking litter. I can remember it as a kid. Fucking Carson was a fucking ghetto.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm glad I got out of there. But it kind of, they take the fucking lower middle class, fucking working class California, and they do make it look kind of a post-apocalyptic without any damn input. They didn't have to change anything. That's the way that fucking area looked.
They shot in like a particular neighborhood. The interiors were a set.
Yeah.
On a studio, but some of the freeway scenes and stuff like that was just like a closed down like stretch of freeway that was being worked on or whatever. So they actually just got to film on that. So they really got like the most bang for their buck, I guess.
Yeah.
The thing that I think the first time I saw this, because I think like you, the first time I saw Assault on Precinct 13, because I love, you know, John Carpenter's Bob, obviously The Thing, Escape from New York, Halloween. And I saw this one and I was just kind of like, eh. But watching it again, I think the first time that I watched it, I didn't connect all the shit. Because what ends up happening...
Yeah, it seems disjointed.
It seems just disjointed. But then when you watch it again, like easily the first half of this minute, it's not a long movie. It's only 91 minutes, I think. Easily the first half of this movie, if not more, is setting up all the threads. Yeah. Like the very beginning, and they don't even, like a lot of it's show don't tell. Like a lot of it, they don't really say what's going on, or there's just like shit like a newscast in the background or something like that. Because I don't think that I connected the shots at the beginning with like all the gang members dead with the four remaining gang members doing the thing with the like the blood oath or whatever. They had stole like a bunch of weapons. And then the cops, like, raided their hideout and shot a bunch of their gang members of Street Thunder. And then, so they had swore a blood oath. They're going to get back at the cops and they're going to start shooting random people around L.A. just because they're mad. So there's that strain that starts.
Yeah.
Then you have the whole thing with Lieutenant Bishop, and he's kind of like got to go to this fucking, you know, precinct that's closing down. And then you have this other shit where the four gang members are driving around town, like, you know, wanting to shoot random people. And then you get like...
And there's also the thing about Wilson and his buddy, the other convict.
Yeah, and then there's like a whole bus full.
Which is kind of the Keith David Krussel dynamic that's happening in the thing. It's kind of like that.
So so you can say it's not a bus full because it's only like it's only like a few of them.
It's like six of them.
And they're all like in a bus and they're going to Sonora, which is like a 4 or 5 hour drive or something like that. So they're all like, and they kind of get stuck in this precinct too because one of the convicts is sick. I don't know what he has. It's like fucking tuberculosis or some shit. And they're afraid that it's going to like spread to the other convicts on the bus. And it's like, we have to
He's got corona.
I guess. So we have to like put him in the cells. It's like until they can get a doctor. And then there's this other thread with like this dad and his daughter who were driving to, I think the implication from their conversation was that they were going to, I guess, his girlfriend's house, and they're going to, like, they're all going to move in together or something. So they were going there, and he kind of got lost, and then she ends up, she's like, oh, I'm hungry, and he's like, oh, this is a bad neighborhood, we shouldn't stop and stuff, and then he has to stop at a phone booth, like, to call the person and be like, where the fuck is your house or whatever, and she sees an ice cream truck, and this is probably the most notorious scene from this movie, because the 70s and the 80s, in the movies, they did not fuck around. It's like pretty much this little girl goes to get an ice cream. She gets the ice cream. She walks away from the truck. But then the gang like comes up to the truck and then they're like, you know, they're beating the shit out of the ice cream truck driver. She looks and sees she has the wrong ice cream. She wanted vanilla twist and he just gave her plain vanilla. She walks back to the truck and blam.
Dude plugs her right in the
chest. He just plugs her right in the chest. Now, and she just keels over dead.
Now, some interesting details about the gang members. I haven't verified this. I really haven't time to go back because I just remembered it right now. Two of them look like guys that starred in other Carpenter flicks. One of them is a kind of a bearded Latino guy with a beret, kind of looks like a Che Guevara.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same guy who played Cuervo Jones in Escape from L.A.
It might be, yeah.
The other guy's kind of a blonde hair, kind of a pug nose, or, you know, kind of...
Yeah, he plays White Warlord. That's
White Warlord is his name. You were mentioning his nose, and I couldn't stop thinking about dude's nose. He did kind of have that upturned
nose. It's a little bit of an upturn.
A little bit of an upturned nose. Yeah. That seems to be the same guy from Escape from New York. It is him?
Yeah.
With the mohawk and had the president's finger.
He passed away not too long ago.
Yeah. He did a good job in both of those movies. He looked great in Escape from New York.
Yeah.
Was the other guy the guy that played Cuervo Jones?
I'm not real sure.
Okay.
I don't remember.
It looks to be him.
It probably is because he worked with a lot of Nancy Loomis is in this as well. She was in Halloween, obviously, later on.
Yeah.
She had a small part in this, but it was funny because the first time we saw this, the little girl that gets shot. Oh, and fun fact, when John Carpenter first submitted this to the MPAA to get a rating, they said, okay, well, you're going to get an X rating unless you cut out that scene where that little girl gets shot in the chest, because that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay. So then he cut that scene out, sent that print back to the MPAA, but the print that he sent to the theater still had that scene in it.
Yeah. Carpenter back in the 70s and early 80s, for me, he was known, as a kid growing up watching this shit, he was known for putting cool guns in his movies.
Yeah.
Like, Escape from New York, you know, that was kind of highlighted, the Mac-10 and Snake's version of the Mac-10 with the scope on the suppressor, which is fucking crazy. And then, like, the core burner from Escape from L.A. And in this one, he had some pretty cool shit. And at first, I thought it was a mistake. They show the white warlord in the back seat of the damn assassin vehicle that they're using. He's got an M16A1, and I'm looking at the muzzle, and I'm going, man, the flash suppressor's gone. That's a mistake, you know. What the hell, I was thinking it might have had something to do with the blank adapter. Then the next time they showed it, he had a suppressor on there. I says, oh, he got it right. He screwed a sound suppressor on there, and they did a lot of work in the movie with M16s that were suppressed. I think was it just one M16 or was it multiple? Do you remember, Jenny?
No, I don't remember.
And then, so there's M16s with suppressors on it, A1s. And then there's Mauser C96 broom handles suppressed with kind of a hooky looking suppressor on there. I don't think you could suppress a Mauser. The barrel recoils to the rear. It's toggle action. So, well, no, it's not a toggle action. It's Was that a Tiger? No, Luger was. But it might have been a Tiger Lox. No, it's not. It's got a bolt in it, like a rifle.
That's right.
But I don't think you could suppress that effectively. It would jam. Anyway, just for you gun guys, it does have some pretty cool guns for the time. You look at them now, and they wouldn't be impressive, but...
That was it. Well, the fact that some of the guns were silencer had suppressors on them was kind of a big plot point because right. That was one of the reasons why
they could get away with attacking.
Yeah. Because there wasn't that many people around in the neighborhood, so no one was really hearing all the gunfire. Yeah. So, like I said,
it's a cool idea, but it's in reality it's a plot hole because when you suppress weapons of that caliber, they're not quiet. It just takes.
Well, yeah, but
you'd still hear it. It would be like instead of shooting 5.56 or 9mm, it would all sound like you were shooting 38s, 9mm, and unsuppressed 22s. It just quiets them down a little bit. This is a whole Hollywood thing of that suppressors. Well, silencers don't exist. They're called suppressors, and suppressors just kind of bring the noise down to a level where you don't really need as much hearing protection. Or a rifle kind of now sounds like a pistol, but it works in the movies. Because it works in movie plots, so that's why they use them.
Well, and like I said, they did kind of acknowledge that because they were saying that there wasn't anybody around the neighborhood was largely abandoned.
And I think people thought it was firecrackers.
Yeah, and then I was just going to say that later on, like when the cops are driving around looking for, you know, where all this shit is happening, it comes over the radio, it's like fireworks or could be gunshots. So some people did hear it.
Okay, then that's...
It wasn't completely quiet.
That means Carpenter must have known.
Yeah.
He gave himself an out, which is good. That's good on Carpenter. They're not quiet.
Yeah. So basically, even though, I mean, this movie, it like obviously is, it's not a remake of Rio Bravo, the John Wayne movie from 1959, but it's a similar kind of thing where, you know, in that movie where they were all kind of like stuck in a saloon and they were like trying to like all these gang members and stuff.
Yeah.
Also, a little bit of Night of the Living Dead, because when the gang comes and approaches, they're not... It's not like a type of thing in action movies where there's like protagonist, antagonist, and they both have like personalities. The gang is essentially like pretty faceless and they don't talk much or anything like that.
You just see hands coming at you through the walls.
Yeah, so it's very... And he said that that's kind of like one of the inspirations for that.
He did that in Escape from New York too with the cannibals that came up out of the ground and grabbed that girl in New York. Remember that? They had I forgot what they were called. He had a name for them. Scavengers or something. But there's a lot of crossover.
Yeah.
It's just when you see this one, don't expect Escape from New York. Expect a Western. If you take it as a Western, the tone works better.
Yeah.
It's not a sci-fi.
Because, sci-fi. You know, obviously John Carpenter was a big fan of Howard Hawks, who made Rio Bravo. And he also made Thing from Another World, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And so he used a lot of tropes from that. And especially, like, the character of Lee that's played by Laurie Zimmer, she's kind of like the prototype, what they would call the Howard Hawks woman, because she was, like, this kind of tough but feminine broad that was like not taking any shit and everything. Yeah. Because the funny thing about her in this movie, and I've seen this as, you know, kind of portrayed as both a criticism and, you know, something that people like about the movie, is that she is completely like badass and like stoic.
Yeah.
Like she gets shot like in the arm, like a bullet just wings her or something. And she just like does not react at all.
Yeah.
And then later she's like, oh yeah, my arm kind of hurts and I can't move it. Yeah. But she's just like a total badass. She's just like not having it.
And there was like a connection between her and Wilson.
Yeah.
Who was the convict guy. He killed some guys and he never really answered why he killed them, but he must have had a good reason is basically what he said.
Yeah, because he seemed like a good guy at heart.
Yeah, and they asked him, you know, why don't you just run? He wasn't the kind of guy to run and leave people in need, which means that he must have killed a bunch of bad guys helping somebody else, and he was willing to go to jail for it.
Yeah.
You know, it was a cool flick. Watching it a second time, I think, improved it a lot for me. I don't know if it was the mood or whatever, but I think just multiple viewings, me not fighting it and trying to make it a movie that it wasn't.
Yeah.
I was playing it and kind of wanting to see Escape from New York, but that's not... Carpenter wasn't at that level yet. He didn't have that budget.
And I think, like I said, on a second and third viewing, because I watched it again, actually, this morning.
Yeah, you watched it a third time.
So I watched it a third time this morning. You really start to see, like I said, the way all the threads that he sets up at the beginning, like, all come together at this one. And I think I didn't really get that. I kind of just got, like, all these, like...
It seems to be a hodgepodge at first.
Well, yeah.
And another thing that kind of ruins the tone for me on first viewing is that the exterior shots of the police and the people in the cars reminded me a lot of like old television series like Adam 12.
Yeah.
Something about their uniforms and the tone and the outside tone. And it was kind of different than the interior shots and other shots. So it seemed to be kind of like, when I first saw it, it seemed like they had kind of woven two movies together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But on the second viewing, it was a lot better. Remember some of the exterior shots they were doing at night where they were shooting from outside the car?
Yeah.
And the cool angles. It looked like something out of Mad Max 2.
It did,
Road
actually.
Warrior. So it was pretty good.
But yeah, there's like a lot of cool... You were actually asking about the actress that played Laurie Zimmer.
Yeah.
Very famously, she kind of hated her performance in this because she thought it was like too deadpan or too understated or whatever.
Yeah.
Even though that's what John Carpenter told her to do, because like I said, he wanted her to be like a Howard Hawks type woman character. And the interesting thing, though, is that because you thought she looked kind of familiar. So I looked up her IMDb, but it's like she was only in really a handful of movies and like a couple of stage plays. And then I guess her acting career wasn't really going the way she wanted. So 1979, she retired and she went and became a teacher.
All right.
So apparently she's still a teacher nowadays. Also, the guy that played Napoleon, I think his name's Darwin Jostin. He was in The Fog later on. I thought he looked familiar. And he was also in Eraserhead.
Yeah.
And the guy that played Bishop, Austin Stoker, he was in a shit ton of stuff too. Weirdly, he usually played villains.
Yeah,
He was in Three from Hell. I guess I didn't recognize him because he's like a lot older now, obviously. But it's interesting how... like I said, the little girl that got shot... The first time that I watched this, I was like, God damn it, that looks like Holly from Land of the Lost.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, because her name's Kim Richards. I recognized her. She was in a shit ton of like Disney movies in the early 70s. I recognized her from Escape from Witch Mountain. That's where I had seen her before. But she was in like a ton of those kind of Disney movies and TV movies.
Like Herbie the Love Bug and all that.
She was in some TV shows and stuff like that too in the 70s. I think nowadays, she's in her 50s now, but I think she's on like fucking Real Housewives of Beverly Hills or one of those reality shows that I don't watch.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things about this, and before we wrap up, is that when this movie came out, another thing too that I didn't realize, this spec script was written about the same time that John Carpenter wrote one called Eyes, which would go on to become Eyes of Laura Mars, which was like a movie that I really loved growing up, and I didn't realize that John Carpenter had written that. It's like a film noir type.
I remember movie. The trailer as a kid.
Yeah,
the shit out of me,
it was a creepy trailer.
I don't think I ever saw it.
I'd have to see it again. I haven't seen it for probably 25 or 30 years, but I remember really liking it when I was growing up. But the interesting thing about this is that when it came out in theaters, you know, it was kind of like billed as like a sort of exploitation action movie, shit like that. It did okay, and it got like mixed reviews and stuff in the U.S. It screened at the at a London film festival in 1977. They fucking loved it.
Yeah.
Immediately. Huh. It's like the guy that ran the film festival was like, this is the best movie ever. Everybody has to come see it. So it's like, you know, the fact that it did so well in the UK, because I think that the UK audiences seem to recognize that it was supposed to be a Western, like right away, where it seems like the US audiences were kind of more ambivalent toward it. I'm not really sure why, but because the Brits loved it so much, I feel like it kind of got, a sort of critical reassessment, in the U.S. over the ensuing years.
I think of the time in 76, there were a lot of movies that were kind of like this.
Maybe.
Or there was, you know, there had been a lot of movies, a lot of Westerns. And Westerns was kind of a tired genre.
Maybe that's why. Maybe American audiences were kind of sick
like
of Westerns.
Sick of that shit, yeah.
And we're just kind of like,
right.
Meh.
And there was a bunch, you know, action movies, you know, like Bullet and, you know.
True.
Steve McQueen movies,
yeah.
And you know, I don't really think that this kind of competed with those.
It kind of got a critical reassessment, though,
yeah.
Like I said, and I've seen
it aged well, though. I think.
Yeah, and I've seen some people that actually place it in their top. I mean, I've seen some critics that say it's their favorite John Carpenter movie.
Oh, I'd have to say no.
Really. But most people that are into John Carpenter, they usually put it around 3, like behind The Thing and Halloween. I would probably put it in the top 5 of John Carpenter's movies.
Hard to say.
You know what I mean?
Because, you see, I didn't like Escape from L.A. on first viewing. But after multiple viewings, I kind of grew to like Escape from L.A.
Yeah.
So I really kind of like The Thing, Escape from New York, Escape from L.A., the Halloween ones, The Fog. There's a lot of good, he had a lot of good movies.
That's
a lot
what
of
I
movies
mean.
That are better
like
than this one. So this one was, I think, this one is at the bottom of his good ones, I would say.
Yeah.
But way above shit like Ghosts of Mars and some of those stuff. Some of those movies I don't think Carpenter actually directed. I just think he's got his name on them.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't think he was totally involved in a lot of those bad ones that came out. They just don't feel like a Carpenter movie.
Some of them don't, yeah. Like, and I don't know if that's just because he got older and he kind of like lost his mojo, or if he wasn't as involved. Because I feel like
I think he's having friends direct him for him.
I mean, this movie, particularly Assault on Precinct 13, he not only wrote and directed it, he also edited it under the name John T. Chance, which was the John Wayne character from Rio Bravo. He named himself that. But he actually did edit it, and he did the score, and he produced it too, I think.
Problem with Carpenter is that he came out with some badass fucking flicks and got shat on every time. See? Thing came out, and that was a badass flick, and the critics and everything just shit on it. It didn't make enough money.
Yeah.
E.T. whipped its ass. And then it was the same thing with Escape from New York.
Yeah.
It got panned. That's a fucking cult classic, though. That's an awesome flick. Flick made out of nothing.
I do kind of feel like, I can see why he got disillusioned.
Yeah, you'd be like, fuck, man, I can't make a good movie without getting shit on.
Yeah. It's just, and it's sad because it's kind of like his curse that he makes these movies that are, like, amazing, but nobody recognizes that they're amazing until, like, many years later.
Right.
And it's like, I can see how frustrating that would be, and how finally he was just like, fuck all of you.
Yeah,
just,
and then he came out with things like, you know, what was that one? Something of Darkness?
Prince of Darkness.
Prince of Darkness. And Prince of Darkness was kind of good, but not really.
That was like half a good movie.
You could tell it was a Carpenter movie, but
It was very Carpenter-y.
Yeah, but it just didn't have kind of a unified feel. The story wasn't tight enough, and the characters weren't quite compelling enough for me. It was weird, but not good enough.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it was edit and script.
Yeah, I feel like most of his best movies, and I think most people would agree, most of his best movies were from, you know, late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
So after that, some of the other ones were hit or miss. Like I said, I haven't seen some of his really new ones. Like, I haven't seen The Ward or anything. But
I think The Thing took a lot of wind out of him because that's a masterpiece.
It's a masterpiece, and I think he knew it was a masterpiece, and nobody recognized it. So he was just like, man, fuck this shit.
Fuck.
So yeah, I can see how that would happen.
That would have fucking really burned me up to do that.
Yeah, I'd have been really mad.
Like, shit.
It would be one thing if you made a movie and you didn't really care about it and you didn't really think it was all that great. And other people said, yeah, it's not that great. You'd be like, yeah, I didn't think it was that great.
That movie was made
But that, that's what I mean. But he made that and he like poured his heart and soul into it. That was like a movie that he had wanted to make like forever because he loved the Howard Hawks original.
The whole cast, the whole team knocked it out of the fucking park.
Yeah.
You know, blood, sweat, and tears, you could tell.
Yeah. And so, you know, the same thing. But so if you're really interested in Carpenter and you haven't seen this one, I should note that there was a remake done in 2005 that I think Ethan Hawke was in it and maybe Lawrence Fishburne. I don't know if I saw it. If I did, I didn't make an impression because I don't remember. I've heard it's not very good, but like I said, I can't even remember if I've seen it or not. But, you know, most of the time, the original is always better. Can I say, too, that one of my favorite characters in this, I think he only has one scene, is the fucking police captain.
Yeah.
You know when, like, Lieutenant Bishop first gets there?
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, well, I'll tell the captain. Well, everyone is, like, super cranky, for one thing, like, in this fucking precinct.
Yeah.
And so so he goes in there to, like, talk to this guy, and this guy is just like, what the fuck? It's like, so many fucking car thefts and aggravated assault. Blah, 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 blah. And he's got, like, this big fucking shotgun, like, across his desk, and he's like, Lucas. It's hilarious.
Before we finish the retrospective, I want to give another shout out to another Carpenter flick that we briefly mentioned. That's The Fog.
Yeah.
Don't forget about that. The movie had problems. There wasn't enough horror scenes in it.
Yeah.
But it did have a good gothic ambience to it that at the time.
I do. There's something that's like the atmosphere about it.
Kind of fucked me up. That movie scared me, but it didn't really show enough.
Yeah.
That was the only problem with it. The rest of it, though, they got it right. Carpenter got it mostly right. It needed a couple more violent horror scenes in it.
And he actually went back and added some, too.
He did?
Because originally...
Is that the copy we have?
Yeah, because originally it was just supposed to have less. Okay. It was originally just supposed to be a ghosty movie. And then, like, when it was done, he was like, man, like, there's all these slasher movies coming out now. Maybe I should put more gore in there. So he went back and put more gore in it.
It needed even more than the I think you're right. I think it was even tamer when we saw it on cable.
Yeah.
Back when we were kids.
Well, yeah, because they would have cut a lot.
It still scared you, though, especially when you were a kid.
Yeah, it was creepy. It had, like, a really creepy atmosphere.
Real good acting. It was kind of a creepy idea. The fog coming, you know, there's something in it. But yeah, no, that should have been released as a slasher movie.
Yeah.
You know.
Although I like old school ghost stories too, right. But it's like, I don't know.
It needed about a good more 5 minutes of fucking blood and violence and some horrible shit.
Yeah.
And then it would have been perfect.
Yeah.
I think.
But you know, and I have to say, The Fog was remade too, and that sucked.
Oh, the remake of The Fog.
The remake was horrible. No,
only the original's
not
bother.
Good. I'm just saying. Yeah. Well, you know what? The Fog.
The original actually was a good kind of sci-fi movie. You know, sci-fi TV. You know, the sci-fi channel?
Yeah.
It'd be like something you see on the sci-fi channel.
Yeah.
If you didn't pay for it, and you were just watching it as a kid, it'd be enough. But when you look at the original, you compare it to the original, you'd go like, no, not even close.
Yeah.
The original had a certain gestalt to it. Now, I don't know if maybe it's because we were in the right place, the right time of our lives to see it, you know, when we were kids. Seeing it back in the context of the time, I think, might have something to do with it. But I don't know. I still like that movie.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, like I said, so this one, if you're into Carpenter and you somehow have not seen it, it's not a horror movie by any stretch of the imagination.
More like a Western.
It's like a Western action type movie. And like I said, there's a lot of setup, but that's something that I kind of like about it. And sometimes, like I said, if you saw it one time and you didn't really remember anything about it, like, it definitely benefits from, like, second and third viewings because you can see, like, all the threads tying together.
And it does have a problem of the movies of the time, and that was them trying to use these 70s gangs as hard asses and just the way they dressed back then and the physical fitness of the time, and they weren't intimidating looking.
Well, every time I see, like, a gang-oriented, because what were we watching the other day, Class of 1984 or whatever it was that has, like, gangs in it?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, every time I see a gang from a 70s or 80s movie, I'm always like, fame!
Yeah. They're just soft.
I'm gonna live forever.
Yeah, it's definitely, you can tell that these are people that came out of drama school. They're just soft as fuck, you know what I mean?
Well, they're just like we said before, it's like they always try to make, like, punks, and like they always try to make like all these gang members. They're supposed to look tough, but it looks like a costume.
Yeah,
it's really, really hard to avoid that,
right?
But it's like but I had just had to laugh at, like, the fucking gang being called Street Thunder.
Yeah,
I'm like, can you imagine if, like, a fucking gang is just like, even if they had guns and stuff, you'd be like, nah, bro.
First time I saw a cool depiction of a gang would have been like Predator 2. Remember the fucking Jamaican fucking posse?
Yeah,
Jamaican
vaguely.
Voodoo posse.
Yeah.
And then the Colombian cartels were fighting the cops. That was how they should have looked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They got that right. But that was what? 89? 88? Something like that. It took them a while to get it right. The Jamaican Voodoo posse. I mean, that would actually look like a gang of guys that would kill you.
Yeah, like I said, it was kind of hard to do a gang, like, you know, they were trying to do everything tough. Like, the Warriors was probably, like, the worst
Warriors
example of that. Because I'm just like, come on, give me a break. No one would be afraid of those dudes.
No, walking around.
They all have, like, matching outfits on.
Yeah, matching outfits,
come on.
Fucking sleeveless, wearing, like, a Buck-05, fucking with swish in their walking shit, man. Fucking come the fuck on, man. They're coming out of dance class. They're not coming out of the hood.
I mean, if you're going to do a gang, it's like,
And they wouldn't even carry guns.
Look at what they did with, like, Clockwork Orange. That was a fucking scary-ass gang.
Right, yeah.
And they all had, like, matching costumes, but it was still terrifying.
Well, it made sense that in Clockwork Orange they didn't have guns. There were evidently no guns. I don't even think the cops had guns. It's Europe. But the Warriors, I think, was supposed to be what? New York? Manhattan? Or some shit like that? Maybe L.A. somewhere? Maybe Chicago? I don't really remember. It's hard to get through that movie today. But Warriors is just a fucking joke, man.
It's still fun, though.
And they were, like, supposed to be all these badasses and bad guys. Oh, they're dangerous, but they're not so dangerous where they wouldn't use a gun.
Yeah.
They had to just, you know, they'll just kick you to death, slap you to death. You know what I mean?
I guess.
They're just going to slap you to death like that.
How funny would it be if somebody made a gang movie that was just all slap fights? I would watch that shit.
Yeah.
Street Thunder, come out and play.
Street Thunder. Back up. Out of my neighborhood.
That's what I mean. It sounds
that's
like...
That's the way the Warriors was.
Yeah, it definitely was kind of like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so Assault on Precinct 13. Again, thank you, Dominic, for sending us the really awesome Steelbook edition of that. If you would like to watch it, I just noticed this morning that it is on Tubi for free. Yeah. So you can check it out. Very nice HD presentation. Just have to sit through a commercial at the beginning.
Probably transfer right off this Blu-ray, probably.
I believe it is. It looked about the same as it did when we watched it on the Blu-ray.
Okay.
So yeah, check it out if you're a John Carpenter fan or just a fan of 70s cinema in general.